with Sophie Black.
Hello and welcome back. My guest this week is the comedian, actress and writer Izzy Sooty. She's best known for playing Dobby in Peep Show, but she's also done loads of things and tours regularly, and she's had a radio show, I think, and she's brilliant and wonderful, as you will discover if you don't already know. Her partner is the comedian Ellis James, and they have two kids. And when she came in to talk to me, I asked her whether she'd always imagined that she'd have kids.
I probably thought that I probably would all my life. And if I look at drawings that I did when I was growing up, they were always of a bride and groom. Like, for years, I just did drawings of a really detailed veil and a bodice.
Oh, wow.
And I remember making this thing for my grandma, which was like a miniature kind of theatre out of a shoebox with curtains, and inside were a bride and groom drawn and coloured in. So it's odd. But then we're not married, so...
Do you still make those little boxes, just leaving them just around the house?
In the bread bin, you know, in the dishwasher. We've been engaged for about 9 years and properly engaged for about four. So I'm sure we will. Now I've had both kids, we will. It's turned into sort of thing. Oh, we may as well do it for tax reasons.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, sort of, all the romance has gone out.
Well, also, I think that when you have... We got married after I was pregnant. And then when we got engaged, which just seems so silly, and people were like, oh my God, that's amazing. And I was like, well, we're pregnant. So we're kind of like, that's saying we're kind of like...
Yeah.
To get, like, that's already, in my mind, that's the commit, like,
sure,
the proper commitment.
Yeah.
You can't get out of that one very
easily.
And
had you bought somewhere as well, or were you renting?
Yes.
Because I always think if you buy, we bought somewhere together, and everyone was like, when we got engaged properly as well, people were saying, they were like, oh, wow. Like, what kind? I was like, oh my God, we own a house together and we've got a kid. We're probably going to have another one.
Already, like, did you not see this coming?
Yeah, exactly. It's really.
It's going to be your bridesmaid.
Yeah,
oh my God.
Yeah. You think for the hen do, I just want one night away. I just want to lie there and watch Better Things.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Oh, I love Better Things.
Yeah, me too, my God.
It's so good.
Yeah, so in the drawings of the bride and groom, there were never any babies. So
right.
The bride wasn't holding a baby. I suppose that wouldn't have fitted in with my idea of a wedding then, though, would it?
No, exactly.
She couldn't have already
had
a child.
No way. Could that be ridiculous?
Anyway, I suppose what you think when you're young doesn't necessarily
translate, exactly.
Does it? I guess what I'm saying is I didn't grow up dreaming of being a mum, and I guess some people do grow up thinking that they'd love to be a parent, don't they? And they're sort of very maternal from a young age.
I think, as you say, there are sort of separate things. There's things you think as a kid, and you think things as a kid, like you're going to be married with kids at 25, and then you kind of get to 25 and you go, oh my God, you know, and all that kind of thing. So it's really separate. But I think from talking to people, there often seems to be like a point where... you go, and it sounds really cliched, but I think lots of people have had it, where they kind of go, oh, hang on, I really want... Like, there's a moment where they kind of go, oh, no, we're gonna have to do this, or we're going to have to do this now.
Yes, yes, and that is what happened to me, really. It was probably... I was listening to Kirsten O'Brien's podcast with you, you know, when she was the guest, and she just said age, and it was so funny. She was just like, it was age that made me... And I think I was thinking, God, it was probably quite similar with me. I think... But although I did think, you know, I'm getting towards my mid-30s, we should probably... I did also just wake up one day and suddenly really want to do it, and sort of almost, really overnight, made the appointment to have the contraceptive implant out and started to buy ovulation kits immediately.
Yeah,
and it was quite odd. It was like when people have a crisis and start running half marathons suddenly, or... You know, like, what are you doing? You're going for a jog at 2 a.m. and it's like, I have to do this. I suddenly was like, and going on forums the whole time of, it was quite weird.
Yeah.
Like, I did suddenly really, really want a baby.
Yeah.
And so probably age came into it. And I think that's the straightforward answer. But there definitely was something that completely beyond my control.
Yeah.
And I wonder what would have happened if I'd been single then. And if it would have come about, because I felt I was with the right person.
Mm.
I felt I was with the right person.
Do you still feel that? That's another podcast.
No, I am with the right person, I'd like to make clear. So I knew I was, knew is better than felt, isn't it?
Yeah.
I knew I was with the right person. And I wonder if, and I'd been single for about a year before I met Ellis, and I was, I don't know, about 30, 31 or something. And I look back on that year as kind of having lots of fun and living with, you know, some people from college who I'd lost touch with because I've been in a long-term relationship.
Yeah.
And sort of this second adolescence.
Yeah.
But actually, when I look at my diary in that time, I really wanted to meet someone and settle down. So I think sometimes you remember things differently from how they actually were. And I think I probably was thinking about wanting to settle down and have kids inside.
Did you get pregnant quickly? How was the...
Do you know what? The trying to get pregnant made me realise that I'm actually a bit of a control freak, and I wouldn't have said that I was before.
Right.
But that had previously... I think that a side of me likes to control things. I don't mean like saying to Ellis, you're not allowed to go out after 9 p.m. What I mean is I'm sort of knowing when things are going to happen. I think I quite like to know, like, okay, that's what's happening a week on Thursday and so on. And I think previously it had manifested itself in my career. So I'd sort of been like, I'm going to do this gig then, and then I've got this, and
and I
need to work really hard on the Edinburgh show, and then this is the deadline.
Yeah.
And then so I sort of tried to apply that to getting pregnant and quickly realised it doesn't really work like that. You can only have sex at the right time and then cross your fingers.
Yeah.
And do all those crazy things like lie upside down and put your legs up against the wall.
Yeah.
I did absolutely everything that anyone ever told me to do.
Yeah.
So I was like, if I do it all, then...
Then it's got to work. Something's got to work.
Yeah. So it took, I think 6 or 7 months with Betty, which, you know, which is our oldest child. We were very stressed, and I do think that came into it. We were moving house, we were buying a flat, and it's very stressful. I find it very stressful moving.
Yeah.
I was also writing my radio series, and that I found that very stressful, and doing other bits of work. And when I think of the amount that I used to work, I now can't believe.
Yeah.
I used to gig almost every night, and I used to just, you know, and so we took Christmas off. We sort of said, let's give ourselves a break. So it was getting a bit like I was sort of crying when I got my period, and thinking, oh gosh, you know, what if it never happens and all that. I think I tend to sort of quite quickly go to, oh my God, what if it never happens? And it was like, I had to sort of chill out.
Yeah, and also that's the sort of catch 22, isn't it? That maybe the more stressed you are, the more difficult, you know.
Yeah, except, isn't it annoying when people are like, just relax.
Yeah,
and
totally. And you're like, I can't because I want it to happen.
It's grim. So we took Christmas off, and then it happened in the January. It was a reasonably straightforward pregnancy, I suppose, that one. I had, with both of them, I had this thing called low pap A, which King's College Hospital in South London test for, and I don't think all hospitals do, because they're a teaching hospital, and I think sometimes they sort of go into more detail than perhaps other hospitals do, and I can't fault their care. But yes, with both pregnancies, they discovered this thing called low pap A, which is, as far as I understand it, and this is probably slightly inaccurate, a hormone. If there's low pap A, it's indicative of a lack of hormone in the placenta that might affect the growth of the baby.
Oh, right.
And it can lead to a small baby, and it can lead to miscarriage or stillbirth.
Right.
They had to give me extra scans with both pregnancies and stuff. So that was the only thing with Betty that marred it a bit, I suppose, because it wasn't entirely straightforward.
Yeah.
And I had to have more blood tests and things go in more. And they said, don't Google it. Just don't Google it.
Right.
So I didn't,
right.
which is good.
Yeah,
Because I think a lot of these things, you can Google them, and it's just always the worst.
Yeah, yeah.
And sometimes I think you get told things and you think, I sort of wish in a way that I didn't know. I think for some people it can be good to know, can't it?
Yeah.
But I think for me, I just sort of thought, oh, I just want to kind of go around in floaty dresses and eat cake. And,
exactly.
Maybe they could tell me these extra scams just because they like me.
Yeah. They just think your baby looks so cute.
Yeah,
they want to just
wanna see it again.
How was your birth? Is it okay?
So with Betty, it was it hurt loads. I know that you know that it will, like, you know it will in your head, yeah. but you don't really understand in what way. I've just written a novel that I've just handed in about sort of that's got bits about, there's a character in it who talks about birth, who's like sort of new best friend of the main character. And when she talks about birth, because I wanted to have a bit in it, I've sort of always wanted to use it. And this character's really straight talking. But anyway, the way she describes it, I tried to put it into words, the way she's describing birth. And it's actually really hard to. She was saying it's like something, like a screw being twisted inside you. And then I added on loads more things. I was like, it isn't right. It was like a collage that I was sort of plastering more and more things onto to try and describe it. Because it's sort of so primal in a way, isn't it?
But screw being turned inside you is quite good.
It was like, I think I said an old rusty screw.
Because
like,
it's a movement,
it's been there for
isn't
ages.
It?
Yeah. It's like it shouldn't be turned. Yeah. Like, but you know it's going to turn more and more.
And yeah.
It hurt a lot. And I think I didn't have any pain relief because, but that wasn't through, I didn't have a birth plan. I think perhaps because of the low pape both times, I never ever even talked about a birth plan. It was just like,
I
know
take
that I'll
it
be in
cunt.
Hospital and all that.
Yeah.
And I did want to be in the pool, but then that was immediately, they said your blood pressure's high, so that's just not going to happen. So I was like, okay.
Fine, yeah.
But it was quick, I think, for first birth.
Yeah.
So the contraction started about 3 or 4 in the morning and then had her at 9 p.m. So it was all within one day. And then I managed to do my tax return while I was at home. That was probably about 11 a.m. because I suddenly panicked. I wasn't
sorry. You did your tax return whilst you were in labour.
Yeah, but what? So you know when people say, "Have you ever had it?" When people are like, "I was in labour for a week."
And you're like,
"Were you?" Sometimes people are definitely.
Yeah.
But you know that thing where you think at the beginning you are in labour in inverted commas, but the contractions are so mild that.
I have to say, so my first, I was from the very first twinge where I'm going, it sort of feels a bit like a period pain.
Yeah.
Like I'm literally from that very first twinge to giving birth was 5 hours. And
that is so quick.
Yeah. And people saying to me things like, take in, you know, your iPad, load it up with loads of TV because you'll be watching stuff and, you know, and take this and that. And I would just afterwards just think, I mean, when would there have been time? Like, I can't, you know, I'm literally, like, panting for a minute between the contractions so quick. You know, like, it's not, I'm not thinking, I might watch an episode.
You'd be pressing pause and then you'd be watching, like, 25 seconds of it and then...
Exactly.
But I can't hear it over my screen.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
So, you're right. There's got to be...
I don't mean to. I know that some people do really have long labour, so I don't mean
and I
to.
Think,
I'm
I
sure
think
it's
the
very,
frustration with that is it's not that it's just intense pain for like 3 days. It's just the fact that you
it's just
don't
that
know
you're
what's
locked
happening
in then
and you're
to
locked
a process.
In.
Yeah, for
exactly,
sure.
Yeah.
I think what I mean is, you know, when you know someone's had a tremendously long and difficult labour, then someone comes along and tries to sort of trump them and says, "Well, I was in labour," and you think, "You weren't. This person really went."
Yeah.
And I know that you. Yeah. You know, I know you were watching X Factor for the first 5 hours. On
yes, exactly.
Yeah,
but
also, it is different for everyone. And I don't want anyone listening to be like, actually, I was in labour for a week. And,
I think we should do some kind of top Trumps card system.
Yes.
And, you know, it's like, yes, it was longer, but it was less painful.
Yeah, no, exactly. It's
you know,
true.
Did
it's
you have
true.
An epidural? Yes. Then you get these points, you know,
yes,
whatever.
Yes. And what would the winner get?
Yeah, the winner would get a baby.
Yeah. Another one.
Yeah, another one.
So it was quick, though. I did do my tax return. And
that's amazing.
Well, you know what? It's the side of me again that wants to know. Okay, I've done that. That's ticked off.
Yeah,
I can, you know,
and clear the decks before she comes.
I had this real feeling that I had to.
Yeah.
But having said that, we were really unprepared. Like I had one baby grow that was 0 to 3 months. I didn't know that newborn was a size.
Yeah,
and I remember this stripy baby grow just hanging on its own in this wardrobe. And then the hospital bag was packed. The hospital bag. So there was this list that was being emailed around that I think started with someone from NCT and had been added to many times, which was what you need to take into hospital. And on the list was 40 maternity pads.
Yeah.
Right, so 40, right? So it was like, and I, as I said before, if someone says to do something, I'm just like, I've got to do it. Yeah, like if a policeman said, jump off that cliff.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, okay,
yeah,
sergeant.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I was like, okay, we've got to get 40 maternity tabs. Not 39, not 41. No, it's got to be 40. So we got exactly 40 maternity pads, and they took up approximately a third of Ellis's suitcase that he took to Australia when he went for 3 months, right? So we had this suitcase that was higher, probably about as high as higher than my waist, I'd say, when you're wheeling it along.
Right.
And he'd brought me all these snacks and things from prep, like cranberries, and he'd read that you need protein, so all these nuts. And they said when we arrived, it was the biggest hospital bag, in inverted commas, they'd ever seen. Like, everyone was just laughing. We like wheeled it in. They were like, oh my God, are you staying for a year? Like, what? And I was like, I've got my 40 maternity pads.
Oh, it's so funny.
Towels. My friend told me to get two white nighties.
Yes.
Why white?
The thing
it's
is, like some people
that you bleed.
End up, yeah, exactly. And also, some people end up staying for a week, in which case,
you need it.
But also, you will be able to go home. Your partner will be able to go home and collect stuff. We were exactly the same. We didn't even stay the night. We had like iPad and snacks and
towels,
slippers.
I know. Well, the truth is, I was so kind of traumatized and disorientated and completely focused on the baby that I couldn't even face opening this bag.
No,
so I didn't even brush my teeth.
No,
I didn't.
Of course not.
I was like, oh my God, all I can see is these maternity pads, and I've been given maternity pads by the hospital.
Yeah,
I don't
exactly.
Yeah, it's
weird, isn't
odd.
It?
Odd.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was, so it was quick. It was quick with her.
Yeah.
It was quick.
I think let's fast forward to like after the first month, maybe.
Yeah, okay.
Like, what, how did you get in your groove, and how did you find it, and did it come naturally to you, or did you find it really hard, or?
Well, I think what I tried to do was continue, and I did this for quite a while, was to basically work as much as I had before, but also look after her a lot of, most of the time, i.e. get grandparents in to help, you know, here and there, and just take her with me. Otherwise, I did a voiceover when she was 3.5 weeks old and took her with me to like a 2 or 3 hour session.
Was that at the BBC?
No.
Because I think I was working one day when you took her in.
I think me and Ellis did a Radio 4 thing when she was really young.
Really,
we had to get her a pass. She had to have her own pass.
As if she could.
We said we were going to keep it, and then we just lost it because our house is such a tip. But I really wish we had kept it. I think she was only maybe 4 months, five months old then.
Yeah.
That's funny. And then my mum and her partner came. My mum and her partner used to do a lot of like meeting us at Oxford Circus Tube and taking her to Acosta. And I did a casting, and Josie came and looked after her while just used to have her in the car seat all the time, sort of strap her into an Uber, and then. And then I sort of crashed and burnt, really, but that took about 2 years,
actually.
And now I've really changed my attitude to work. Like, it still means a lot to me, and I couldn't not work because I think I'd feel really odd, because it's always been such, making things and has always been such a part of me, really. And I, you know, when I was growing up, it was just, I was so focused on being a performer, really, rather than a writer. And then I suppose that came a bit later. And now I still adore it, but it's definitely had to shift a bit.
Yeah.
But at first with Betty, I basically carried on a bit like a headless chicken and sort of went, fine.
Yeah.
Not even in that way of like wanting to show the world that I could do it.
No.
Just in a way of like, well, this is who I am.
Yeah.
It's part of who I am. Therefore, it'll be all right. I'll just take her and... People were very accommodating, you know, with the voiceover that I did when she was 3.5 weeks. That was narrating Posh Porn, which PAWN, which was a Channel 4 show that I that ran for a long time that I narrated about a porn shop in Weybridge. And they were amazing, and they got me an extra room at the studio so that I could breastfeed, and sort of got there 2 hours early, I think, and fed her and then went in. But I was still unbelievably stressed. Like, I remember adrenaline just coursing around my body. Like, it got to the other day, I was like, oh my God, I've hardly eaten anything all day. Like, I've just, and I think some people can do it, can continue at full throttle And I know there's a really famous story about a comedy agent sort of being back at her desk within 2 days of giving birth. And I think that's sort of amazing.
Yeah.
But a lot of the time that possibly nannies are involved and, we didn't have that.
Yeah, yeah.
But I've definitely, thankfully, shifted things, not massively, but now I don't really want to go away and film things for a long time. And I don't, you know, I'm not as kind of like, I used to be like, right, what's going to happen this year? You know, I want to do this. Yeah, and I want, and if I think about like 2013, I did Shameless for months and months. I was living in Manchester. I did, you know, something that I'd co-written for Sky, and I did like, I think, a Peep Show that year as well. And I was also gigging the whole time. Yeah. When I look back at those years, I think I'm really pleased that I did that then. But there's absolutely no way that I would want to do that now.
But that's the difference, isn't it? Because it's like, it's the thing of sort of going, there's always that the conversation in terms of like mothers or working mothers is always, you know, the thing of you either choose your children or your career, and, you know, in inverted commas, what's more important to you? And actually, from most of the conversations I've had, it's like, often for people, their career is the most important thing. For, you know, I mean, obviously family and relationships are important too, but like your career is very, very important to you in terms of your life.
Yeah.
And then you have children, and your children are as important to you. Not, you know, obviously, you know, you're going to put them first in terms of their, you know, in terms of their welfare and all that kind of thing. But it's not you wouldn't be yourself if you didn't care about your career, but you're now you've got this additional thing.
Yeah, it's like I always think with kids, it's like you've added another dimension.
Exactly. Yeah.
So then it's like you've got to it's then like you've got to make everything else settle into the new framework. Yeah. I think that often takes years.
Yeah. It's like you're playing a computer game and you've learned how to do something at one level, and then you're now doing it, but you've got to do the same thing but on a skateboard.
Or, yes,
do you know what I mean?
Sure,
it's like it's the same thing, but I'm now, because I care about this, I now have to do it, which is a bit harder than how I did it before.
Kind of and the skateboard keeps putting tiny things in its mouth and
and shitting everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, things like that,
No, it is like that. But I also think, I always thought it would be like a battle between kids and my career. And now I don't feel like that. I feel like that they're different beasts, really. And that I feel so much more content than I did.
And I don't
feel like they're cut from the same cloth. I know that I have to work, or I think I wouldn't be happy, and then I wouldn't be a good mum. But I also, like a lot of us, if not all of us, parents, I think dads as well, feel guilty when I'm away and stuff.
Yeah.
But on the whole, I think it's possible to adjust and kind of not view it as a battle between one and the other, but view your work as part of you and your kids as a separate entity who you love and prioritise.
Yeah, I think we also live in a time where it's very much sort of, you know, everyone. I mean, my dog recently was sort of, you know, she goes around the house and has a pee here and there. And I spoke to a dog trainer, and she was like, you know, she might be understimulated. You know, maybe it's just that she feels a bit insecure when she's in that part of the house, and you're going to kind of play more with her and all this kind of thing. And so now I'm like playing with the dog in the morning. I'm thinking, hang on, I'm stimulating the dog, I'm stimulating the kids, I'm then going out. Do you know what I mean? It's just like, oh my God, you know, like it was better off. You know, if I think about us growing up, my mum didn't stimulate the dog.
No,
she had the dog for a walk.
I was just going to say, like, if it was the 60s, you know what I mean? There would never be a dog trying to say that to be like, just let her outside the door for a week. Yeah.
Exactly. So it's like, so there's that. And I sort of think about the kids and, you know, there was a day recently where I was, you know, I'm working on this series, and I'm spending all morning emailing, you know, trying to book guests and doing all this kind of thing. And then of course the answers to the emails come through when my kids have finished nursery, and I'm feeling like, oh shit, you know, I'm sitting on the sofa and I'm not,
hate,
you know,
that feeling. I know, but you know, it's horrible where you're trying to type. When you're trying to type an email, you're bloody kid, like, you know, that horrible
you feel
feeling
so guilty
where you
they're
feel
going, mummy,
so
mummy.
Guilty, where they're like, "Can I show you this picture?
Please
that
put
I did
phone
it for
down.
You."
Yeah.
You're like, "Yeah, sure. Like, I'm just trying to work out how to spell dissemination for this email." It's so, and then I think to myself, "Don't do it now.
No.
Don't even do it for 2 minutes,
just because you can."
Yeah, and I'm sure that any parenting people would say that's you know, that you should probably say, or do it after they go to bed, or I'll lock myself in the toilet for 4 minutes and do the things I need to do rather than trying to. I hate myself in those moments because I think, you know, what is really that urgent?
Exactly that. And I had this conversation with Jen Brister a couple of weeks ago, and she was like, you know, there's a point at which it's just so true. And I was so in that space where I was like, I've got to just put the phone down, or, you know, just like put it on the, you know, by the front door and, you know, not check it or whatever. And then that evening I met lots of my old school friends who have kids like 10 years older than ours. You know, they're a bit old. Well, not, they're the same age as me. I'm an older mum. But they...
You didn't just do really badly at school.
I kept going.
Well, no, you were 18.
Child
in
prodigy.
The class
exactly. Yeah. And they were saying, and they just looked at me. They're so brilliant in this situation because they're always like, they'll go, but your kids have also got to know that they've got to fit in with your life. And sometimes there's a situation that, you know, that doesn't happen every day. And you suddenly got these emails and you had to send these emails. And they're like, and they sort of said it in that kind of really simple, slightly shruggy kind of like.
Is it because their kids are older, do you think?
I think their kids are older, yes. But I also think that they've got to a point where they're like, you have to, there are some days and some things that you have to do something and your kids have to slot in. Not every day, obviously, but like, that also made me feel better too, which is like, occasionally I am going to have to do that and I can't avoid it, and that's okay. And but then also to kind of check myself and to make sure I'm not doing it because I'm not just like bored and looking at Facebook on my phone.
Well, I mean, you know,
do you know what I mean?
Within, what, 30 seconds of playing with a baby, I'm thinking, when can I look at my phone?
I mean, that's
the awful truth.
Yes, yeah.
But then what I have to do is put the phone down and go, Izzy, really, really focus on playing with the baby, and then it's fine.
Yes,
then
exactly.
But I think that it's that initial bit where you're like, "Oh, I'm gonna have to play with them," and then you're, and this is, I mean, I feel awful saying this, and but your hand just flickers towards your phone.
Totally,
because that's what you do. Like if you're on the tube and you think, "Oh, haven't got a book with you," and you haven't, and you've got Wi-Fi. Most people, unless they're very disciplined, would think, "Oh, I'll just check." I'll check the headlines, or I think it's a natural thing to do when you're kind of going into a situation.
It's
become
a
reflex.
When you
sit down, I'm about to do this, so I'll check my phone before I... And it's like, no. Just to play with this baby.
Be in the present.
Yeah, and it's hard.
And it's become,
I do really try and make myself do it.
It's become a reflex of like, you know, you're in the queue at the post office and you're just like, oh, I'm faced with possibly... Yeah. 4 minutes of feeling slightly bored. I don't want to deal with that feeling, so I'm going to just go straight on my phone.
And it's
insane.
Yes, and it's also about, I think, how you view... So, basically, our baby, the younger of our two, Stefan, just doesn't sleep, really. And he's just turned one, and it's like, oh, my God, it's still... So he normally wakes up between 4 and 5, having also woken up multiple times in the night. God. So we're sort of going to try again to... We did sleep train him before Christmas, and it worked in that he slept through. It didn't take very long, and it was not as hard as I thought it would be. And we were sort of saying, you know, we haven't slept in the same bed since he's been born. You know, he's waking Betty up. We've got it. We've really got to do it for everyone.
Yeah.
And then he started sleeping 7:30 till 5, and we were like, even though 5 is awful, because
I'll take
Betty
it.
Used to sleep till 7:30 or 8 for about 5 weeks.
Oh,
we couldn't tell anyone, and now we're really getting... We were so smug. We were like, it's us, it's because we're so chilled. And now it's like, oh, my God, we're really paying the price for that smugness. Like, oh, my God. But I started to sing Little Donkey to him in the dark around Christmas when he got ill, and now I've, like, he's gone completely backwards, and so... Ellis was like, no more Little Donkey. So we've got to put signs up, genuinely going to put signs up in our room saying, because he's still in our room, no more Little Donkey. And no, and it's, I just find it really hard not to cuddle him. And
It's so hard.
Yeah. But like, so for instance, this morning, so we share the nights completely. We do alternate nights.
Yeah.
We used to hand over at 7 a.m. and now it's become 7:30. So normally he wakes up between 4 and 5. And so sometimes you've slept for maybe 3 or 4 hours in 45-minute chunks.
Yeah.
And this has been going on for a year.
So he wakes up every 45 minutes?
Not every night. He was initially, till about 7 or 8 months, he'd wake up every 45 minutes to an hour, and I'd just give him milk. He didn't ever breastfeed. I pumped for a little bit. But so I'd just give him a bottle.
Yeah.
I don't know, you're not supposed to, are you really? Necessarily use bottles to get him to sleep. But when you're that tired, it was just like, oh, my God.
I mean,
And I'd just cuddle him and...
Yeah.
Yeah, we sort of had different ways, and Ellis wouldn't let him sleep in bed with him, yeah. and I would let him sort of doze on me, then try and transfer him. So it was all these different things that were happening every night. And then we had to sort of get into a bit more of a routine, not feed him at night anymore, and he adjusted really well to that. So now it's a bit better. He wakes up once or twice, but it's still not brilliant for one. And then he still wakes up at like 4:15 the other day, and today it was 5. So I go down, and you sort of, without sounding awful, you can feel quite sorry for yourself if you're working and you and you sort of, this is like, you know, your third night that week of maybe 3 or 4 hours broken sleep, and you think, oh, they're one now. And and it's quite easy to go, right, I'm just gonna half go on my phone and he'll be happy sort of crawling around. And and I don't do that now. I leave my phone in the kitchen, so I've got a new watch so that I know the time. It's I don't need to use my phone to see what time.
I can get a watch.
So I leave it down, I leave the phone downstairs to charge, and then I take just to wear my watch upstairs. So I have him in the living room, and I say to myself, you're allowed to watch 20 minutes of a Louis Theroux, because I just love Louis Theroux, and I just finished his book. I'm watching all the old ones again, like the Anne Widdecombe one. So for a treat, I give myself 20 minutes of Louis Theroux with subtitles on. I don't mean I sit there and watch it while... But I say, for 20 minutes I can do that, and that's like my treat. For the rest of the time until 7:30, I give Stefan my 100% attention. Right. And that's my solution to that feeling of, I want to go on my phone. Oh my God, I've got 3 hours of this before I can... So then it's like you're not half doing anything. That's what I try and do with emails as well, if I can, is sort of go, I'm going to deal with this in half an hour, or I'm going to look at my phone, at my work emails, in X amount of time, so that I can be at the park, or I can do this and do that, and then go and do that in the toilet normally, so no one can say that you shouldn't be in there, because no one knows what and then you can just quickly...
Yeah, it's really, it's so important. I mean, I found it the other weekend. I just thought, right, I'm going to just not look at my phone all weekend. Like, I'm not going to check my emails. So I'm going to just put it down, and I'll check them on Monday. Like I would if I worked in an office, when I worked in an office. And then, like, a studio booking that I had, when they'd, like, emailed me on a Friday night. I mean, arseholes. They'd then taken another booking because they hadn't heard from me all weekend. And I, by the Monday morning, lost the studio for an interview on the Tuesday. Do you know what I mean? And I was like, so that's the thing.
Would you say it was still worth it? Like, was it one of those situations where you go, even though I lost the booking, it was still, I'm still glad I did it? Or...
No, well, I mean, yes, it was in the sense that it was less stressful for me, because I felt like, no, it's the weekend, I'm protecting the weekend, and I'm just going to be with my kids, and I'm not going to be sitting here doing work emails, definitely. But equally, the world I work in will not give me 48 hours to reply to an email. So, like, what I do need to do, even at a weekend, which I did last weekend, which was better, was exactly as you say, which is like, I'm going to give myself this point during the day to address these current issues. And I have to do that, sadly. But as you say, like, just to be a bit more, you know, I don't have to respond to everything. Do you know what I mean? Like, so I just need to respond to these two things. If I just responded about that studio, I would have been fine. I didn't have to respond to all 10 emails. Do you know what I mean?
No, so exactly. Like, I think the problem is, when you start to respond to one, you're like, oh, I'll quickly write a reply to this one.
And you're there, and the kids are happy at that point, and you're kind of like, oh, they're okay, they're playing with that, and I can just do this. And that's one less thing to do when I you know.
No, it's very hard.
It's really hard doing it, but it is, but getting that balance is so much more important now that they're a bit older and they are, you know.
And they know what you're doing, and they know it's your phone, and they're like, I know.
Yeah, my daughter will just, like, take the phone out of my hand and just, like, press her head against my head. Do you know what I mean? And just and you're just like, oh, yes, I'm sorry.
I know. You're like, don't drop the phone.
Where'd you put it?
Stop talking! I'm going to get cross with you.
What was it like going from 1 to 2 children?
So if we put his sleeping aside, which was such a shock. And it was such a shock because we'd been so lucky with her.
Yeah.
And then we're so shit at going to bed. We still, even now, can't really get to bed before midnight. We're just incapable of it. So we're our own worst enemies, but it just seems impossible. The house is always such a mess. Anyway, so apart from that, going from one to two, I think in some ways it's easier than naught to one in terms of things like you understand how to use a sterilizer. Yeah. Perhaps don't freak out if they drink bath water. Emotionally, I think I was surprised. I was thinking, oh, I love the second one as much as I love her. And then I did. But what I didn't foresee was that I felt so concerned that she loved him too, and that she felt that I didn't, you know, what I wasn't giving all my attention to him and stuff. So stuff like that, I was like, oh, yeah. We've definitely had more rows since two.
Yeah.
Definitely, you know, we've been really pushed to the end of our tethers, I think, just in terms of, you know, trying to get through each day, sometimes with on hardly any sleep for days on end. And then Ellis went on tour when he was quite young. And my back completely went. I couldn't even pick him up. So then I had to, my mum lives a couple of hours away and she's a bit older now. And she sort of says, well, I can come for 4 hours. And it's like, oh God, you know, I think I need someone to do the night.
Yeah.
So then I had to just get someone to help me. And that was really good in a way. So I just had to ring and say, please, can I just pay someone to come and literally pick him up?
Yeah.
And I'm really lucky that we could pay someone to do that. And, you know, I think otherwise I would have rung around all my mates and gone, I can't walk. I couldn't really walk. I couldn't straighten my spine. I've got an inflammatory joint thing that hardly ever gives me any problems these days. But I think in times of stress and being really run down, it sort of goes... So it's just sciatica that made... But it went right up almost to the middle of my back. Anyway, so he was on tour then. And that was really quite tricky.
Yeah,
he was away a lot. Yeah. And of course, you've got a five-year-old as well who's starting school and, you know, who's got to get used to all that. And I think you can sometimes think, oh, you know, the older one. She's five. She's only five.
Yeah. And she needs... Yeah.
So I think on a practical level, there is in terms of individual things... And stuff like using a buggy, I think you're confident. Yeah. You know, I mean, the first time using a buggy with her, to sort of realise, I had to ask a woman, how do you get off the train?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I had to get off backwards and stuff like that, the second nature thing.
Yeah.
But it's definitely harder, for sure. Yeah, sounds like a very obvious thing to say. No, but some people are like, oh, going from one to two is fine.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, but it's no.
Really not. No. And I think there is that thing where when you have one, you know, when your baby sleeps, you get that time. You know, so people who would work when their baby napped. I mean, I did that in the first year of Zach's life.
Well done. My God, I never did that.
But I never could go to sleep. Like, I just didn't. Maybe I should have done because, you know, but I never could do that. But, yeah, so anyway, so do that. And then, of course, when you have two, there's no gap.
I know.
There's no... Well, there was a horrible thing I heard recently, which was something like... I think someone said it on the podcast actually, but it was something like if you know you're the primary caregiver when you have one child kind of loses their life, and then the partner loses their life when the second one comes along. You know, something like that. Where
you just want to be in a menage a trois.
Exactly. Then you'll be fine. Exactly. But you know, it's that kind of thing where you don't have any. There's no fat, is there? And you know, you're just everything's taken.
No,
up
and I think that's why we've rowed more. It's almost like an athlete. I've got this friend who used to be in Cirque du Soleil, and I remember we went skiing once and she got into the jacuzzi and we all just were like, oh my God, like she was in the bikini. Like there was not like an inch of fat on her body because she was just so fit. She was a tightrope walker, you know, she could do the trapeze. And I sort of feel like that with two. It's like there is no give, like there's nothing, you know. It goes without saying that I don't, you know, I'm so happy that we've been able to have two, especially as I was 40 when I had him. It goes without saying that I wouldn't change anything for the world and I adore them. But I think I underestimated the jump from one to two, for sure.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
really think about it. I just wanted another one.
Yeah,
you sort of
exactly.
think in for a penny and for a pound.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, exactly. And it is, you know, as people always say, like you are in the thick of it with a one-year-old who's not sleeping and all that kind of thing. So like that, like, and I think definitely, well, for me, the lack of sleep was such a massive thing that you kind of say, like you just said to us now, there's the lack of sleep. And it's like, no, it starts with that.
I know.
And that trickles down into everything.
It's affected everything. It's affected friendships, definitely, for me.
Yeah.
I'm sure temporarily, but there's a friend who doesn't have kids who I haven't seen for months, who I used to see probably every fortnight, and she doesn't live far away. And I sort of saying to Ellis last night, God, I feel like I've got, you know, there's a few people that I really, really wish I saw more. And he said, but I think we'll be all right. I just think it's because we're so sleep deprived. It's like you've just sort of got to get through the day. And I've got amazing new like mum friends in the area. I'll just go for a coffee with them and think, thank God I've got them.
Yeah,
it's like
you can't
stretch any further and be like, hey, let's watch The Apprentice. Let's meet up in town. Because it's just like, I can't. I'm just so tired.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
You know. I think that's totally. But I also feel like I am. So Sadie's almost three. And I feel like literally in the last couple of months, I've got to a point where I'm kind of starting to kind of see my good mate. And again, you know, I have good mates who might have kids, but they're in North London. So, you know, like you just all these things that you don't necessarily see the people you want to see or have, you know, and I feel like I'm just starting to kind of like that's starting to slot into place a bit more.
Yes, I think
but
it takes.
You know, it feels like, you know, it's a long time.
It is a long time. But I feel like work has been such an important part of my life in Stefan's first year, which he's just completed. Completed like a horse
well
training thing.
Did he do well?
He's just completed.
Yeah.
He's got a certificate. He was marked down for his sleeping, but thankfully his temperament.
He got through.
Yeah. Work has been, I've been finishing the first draft of this book, and it's been, so at the times when I've felt very, very sleep deprived and sort of unable to function in some ways and just sort of eating like two Kit Kats a day.
Yeah,
like I don't normally eat that much chocolate. Like stuff like that. I think everything just goes. I'm just having like two sugars in every cup of tea.
Yeah.
And I don't have caffeinated coffee, which is, so, I was just like, oh no, I have loads of tea. And on those days when I sort of feel quite wobbly, really emotionally through lack of sleep, the book has been something, doing a few hours on it, because it goes to Childminder a few days a week.
Yeah.
Has actually been like immersing myself in a different world.
Yeah,
and perhaps because of when he was born, I would have written about half of it, maybe, or a third of it. So it wasn't like I was starting from scratch.
No,
but
yeah.
It felt, it's been a good friend to me, the book.
Yeah.
It's been something that's kind of given me energy in a strange way, even though it's been work.
Yeah. And also, do you find that as because you're writing about a character who's a mother and...
Well, the main character is sort of undecided at the moment, but the best friend who she... So she sort of moves back home after a breakup.
Right.
And this best friend has got two kids. And,
yeah.
And that's been... So the main character might... So that's like... It's in such early drafts, really.
Right.
But, I definitely wanted to write about motherhood in some way.
Yeah,
so I thought,
I'll
get the main character. And the main character's sort of... the best friend, Karen, is really... kind of says it how it is and is sort of... quite different from me in the sense that she doesn't really care if she upsets people, whereas I'm such a people pleaser.
Right,
and it's such a tonic to write. Just talking about, you know, kids and her, you know, she's got two boys and she doesn't really pay them that much attention. And she's taught them the passcode to her phone at a really early age. And
it
was actually quite refreshing in a way to write, to not have to, because I think sometimes when you're with other mums, you're so hasty, aren't you, to add like, oh, of course, you know, I do talk to them about the planets and I do show them, you know, and she just doesn't care.
She's
a single mum and she is just really surviving and she loves her kids and would defend them, you know, in any single circumstance and adores them, but in a completely different way from, like, I suppose she shows it in a different way. So I really like and the bit where she talks about giving birth and there's bits where she talks about the early years and I want to put in, and I don't think I've put it into this draft, but my best friend from school has been with her partner since we were in sixth form and he's a Scouser and he was a carpenter and had his own loft conversion company. Is like so tough, you know, like he can build if you gave him a plank of wood, he'd like make a chair out of it in an afternoon.
Right,
he's like,
yeah.
Just like, get the kids outside and get them to roll in the dirt. It's good for them. Like, and they live in the countryside and stuff. And I always, and they've always been quite kind of like, you know, you're the boss and, you know, you have your kids and you have fun with them, but, you know, you're the boss.
Yeah.
Like, none of this kind of like helicopter parenting,
as it's called.
So I think sometimes they look at me and think, oh my God.
Yeah.
But so I've always thought, oh, you know, Bobby never gets fazed by any kind of fuss around kids,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah,
just kind of like,
yeah,
get your coat on, yeah, let's go out, let's go to the park all day. And, but he told me that when their son was really little and wasn't sleeping, he leant down in the night and in sheer frustration, bit into the cot really slowly, just rather than screaming. And then he said in the morning, there's this perfect adult size bite mark in the cot, both sets of teeth, the top and the bottom.
Wow.
Really deep bite mark.
Into the wood.
And he said, I don't want to give this cot to anyone who's having their first kid, because he'd be like, what is this bite mark? You can't even say that a kid did it.
No,
it's so
clearly an adult.
Yeah, and it sort of made me feel better.
Yeah,
I was like,
yeah,
oh, even he gets really, yeah, you know, I think sometimes I think, oh God, do I kind of worry too? I shouldn't have been singing Little Donkey. If Little Donkey,
yeah,
I think it would be all right. But actually he was like, I don't know, you know, everyone kind of gets. So I want to put that in the book. And it's not in this draft, but I think it's such
so
a sort of
good,
lovely,
yeah,
illustration.
And a permanent reminder of how...
Because you can't get angry with them because they're only a baby.
No, no.
But you do sometimes feel like you're losing them, your mind.
Totally.
It's the fifth time they've woken up and you're calculating, oh my God, even if they sleep now, I'm only going to get 4 hours or whatever.
And then now that's in my head, I'm not going to be able to go to sleep because I'm worried that I'm not going to use the full four.
Yeah.
There's a little book that was Zach's and that I now read Sadie. And there's a point in it that makes me feel slightly sick whenever I get to it, because I remember being in the rocking chair with Zach, not being able to get him to sleep, reading it to him and crying as I was reading it to him because I was so tired and he wouldn't sleep, and just like silent tears.
Yes, just rolling down your cheeks as you valiantly carried on reading.
I mean, desperate.
I know.
And I get to that point in the book and I just feel like, oh, thank fucking hell. You know, it's because it is so hard.
It's really hard. And yeah, it must be when you've got a book and you know the exact point.
Yeah.
But thank God, you know, that it's...
It's really triggering for me.
Yeah. Sorry, I can't read that book.
I'm sorry, I can't read
any books.
Yeah.
I went down once when he was about 6 or 7 months old, you know, and everyone's sort of like, don't forget it improves at 3 months or it improves at 6 months and don't forget. And then I think it was after the 6 months and it hadn't changed at all.
Yeah.
And I was just kind of like, oh man. And he'd woken up for, I don't know, maybe the fourth time. It was when he was waking up every 45 minutes to an hour and not even really wanting milk, just don't know what he wanted. And I went downstairs and screamed into a cushion.
Yeah.
I just thought, I've got to just leave the room for 45 seconds, and I counted in my head to 45 seconds because he was crying.
Yeah.
And I just screamed into the cushion and went back in. I was like, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
I think, yeah, right, okay.
Yeah, it's, it's hard.
Oh, God. how's your, now you've had children, has it affected the way you see how you were parented, or do you look at your parents in a different way, or do you kind of...
Yeah, I think I do. I sort of feel... Yes, I do. And I talk to Mum. My dad isn't alive anymore, unfortunately. I really wish that I could talk to him about it, obviously. But I do talk to Mum, and I sort of feel very grateful, really, for, you know, I sort of realise, especially with Betty, because she was the first one, I realised what a sacrifice you make, I suppose. And, you know, especially it was perhaps more traditional then generally, and Dad worked and Mum didn't. Then, you know, once she'd had me and my sister. And then I remember that she used to be so creative with us, and we've got so many tape recordings of Mum reading to us and us all sort of making up songs and stuff like that that have just been part of my life and that have gone on to probably inform what I do as a job, really. That I've just always thought, oh, yeah, that's just what. And actually... it would have been easy not to do that when you're tired. And so I do really feel very grateful to her and my dad, of course. And also I feel like, I hope Mum had me and my sister reasonably late for that era. So I think she was 35 and 39 So I hope that she lives for another 20 years because
yeah.
Not only because of this, yeah. but I want... she stayed alive because I really want to ask her what it's like when Betty's a teenager.
Yeah, so that would be really convenient. Yeah,
it'd be really convenient for me if she'd do a bit more childcare as well. But she's great, and she's I love her very much. But I do want to keep asking her about what, because I was a pretty awful teenager, really.
Were you?
Yes. And I just really hope that, I really hope Betty, especially, I think, I don't know why I feel already that Steffi's quite, that he's more straightforward. Mum was saying the other day, we were looking at him and she was like, oh, Steffi. I call him Steffi and I try and get everyone to call him Steffi, but no one else really does apart from Mum and Betty. She was like, I feel that he's going to be a very simple person. And she was sort of planning out this whole life for him, that he'd marry a woman with a bob who didn't Aww. Really have a great sense of humour, but who was very practical. And that he would be one of those people who sort of goes, I'm all right. Like, you know what I mean? We planned out this whole life for him. And it does seem like, even though he's a baby, it sort of does seem that that is what he's doing.
Yeah.
He's sort of kind of like... I'll eat that.
That'll do.
He sort of goes, I'm hungry. I'll eat this really weird pouch that's got kale and fish and cheese in it. Whereas she's always been a lot more fussy with food.
Yeah.
And it's quite an emotional, she's got such an imagination. And I was thinking, oh God, I feel like out of the two of them,
she'll be the tricky one.
I was awful.
But it's funny though, I think it's often the difference between eldest and youngest. Like, definitely my daughter's much more kind of that.
Who knows, the thing is, I was thinking, but we're talking about our family friends who we've known for a really long time, that they're kids. I'll be careful not to name them, but we've got a lot of family friends. But one of them wanted loads and loads of cuddles when they were little and would just come home and like sit on their mum's lap and just cuddle for like hours. And now that person is older, they're very kind of like practical and kind of like, I don't want... So it's a weird thing that they could change so much. And I remember that. And it's not like that now they're cold or anything, but you can't imagine them like bounding in and sitting for hours.
No.
You know?
But also it's funny, I was talking about this recently, about boys, because I've noticed in my nephews, is, you know, there's that thing where, you know, when I was a little girl, I would have been encouraged to look at the baby, you know, and I would have liked the smell of babies and looking at a baby and all that kind of thing. But my brother would never have been, he wouldn't have been even pointed towards a baby.
Yes.
And I've noticed so much that how sweet young boys are with my kids, you know, that I happen to have two nephews who are amazing and actually much more nurturing and gentle and patient than my nieces, say. And then someone was saying recently that then when testosterone kicks in, that kind of changes. You know, so there's all the hormones and stuff that actually you think that you've got a certain, or your child has got a certain personality. And I wonder how that must be part of the battle in the teenage years, because you're like, no, you're this person.
Yeah,
they're like,
no, I'm not.
Yeah. I'm going to go out and get a
that
job.
Shit.
Yeah, yeah.
Is there any sort of anything anyone's ever said or a bit of advice that now in hindsight you look back and think, that was a silly thing to say? Why did they say that?
I think the advice about breastfeeding, I want to be careful here because I think weirdly there's a tendency for some people to be too pro-breastfeeding and a tendency for some people to be too anti-breastfeeding.
Yes, I agree.
It's quite a sensitive topic.
Yeah.
But from my personal experience, I think there was someone maybe a health visitor or a midwife early on who I felt really made me feel quite sort of pressurised to breastfeed. And I had problems with both of them, breastfeeding. And I did end up mixed feeding Betty, but with nipple shields and with great... My nipples were black at one point, like completely... Like one was like literally like a Rice Krispie hanging on by like a single string to my boob. Like I can't... God. It like bruises, like they were just purple. And I was so determined to do it. And so I think I probably would have put myself through hell trying to do it anyway.
Yeah,
which I did.
Yeah.
Sort of with both of them, really. But I think this person, although it was probably meant well, and I do know that, you know, for a lot of people it works out and it's great,
mm-hmm.
but I felt that perhaps it wasn't the right thing to say at that moment because I was in such an emotional state about it.
Yeah.
And really
what did they say?
Up. Just that, you know, it's really important. It's something very, actually quite innocuous, really, but just it's very important to keep trying because, you know, breastfed babies do have higher IQs, I think it was, or it's their immune system.
And less likely to have allergies.
Yeah.
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 But I mean, it's,
And again, it wasn't like a big, do you know, it wasn't one of those things where people sit you down and go, listen to this and all parenting problems will be solved.
No.
It was kind of an offhand
piece
of advice, really, that I'm sure she'd be mortified if it just came at a time when I was really vulnerable and already feeling...
And also, I think sometimes with lots of things, you just need to know that there's an out. Like, I don't know, everyone has different ways, but, you know, for me, knowing that it was possible to stop would then mean that maybe you would carry on, but
this
you
is
just
the way
know,
I feel
you
about
know.
Mixed feeding. When I went to NCT, it was never discussed that you could do mixed feeding. It was like you either breastfed or you bottle fed. And when someone said, I think it was a health visitor again, saw my boobs and was like, okay, we're going to have to do something here because your nipple is going to fall off. So then I started using nipple shields, which, for anyone who doesn't know, put over your nipple to kind of like help the baby. It enables the baby, I think, to feed in a different way, really.
Right, yeah.
But when she said that I could give Betty one, you know, she said, you can give her a bottle, you can give her, you can do, you know, however many of the feeds you want to be a bottle, they can be, or then on a, and she was like, your supply will go up or down. And it was like someone was giving me a freedom pass. I was like, oh my God. And that was the thing that made me carry on breastfeeding because I was able to...
To be sensible about it. Yeah. That's the thing when it just... And again, that comes down to statistics and whatever, you know, and sort of, like the allergy thing stayed in my head because I've got a million allergies. I'm allergic to everything. And I was breastfed, couldn't breastfeed my kids. Was actually told by somebody who eventually looked at my boobs and said, if you were a cow, you'd be slaughtered.
Wow.
Though horrific, I mean, so horrific, was actually very liberating, which is just like, okay, that's never going to work. Like, I can't do it.
It's
and I
good
still
in
don't...
a way when someone says something like that, because you're like, well, I've got no choice
fine,
here. Yeah.
Fine then,
yeah.
But, you know, and neither of my kids have allergies and, you know what I mean? So it's kind of like, yes, maybe with some kids or with lots of kids, but not every kid, you know.
No.
So anyway.
No.
If someone was here now, pregnant, about to have a baby, what advice would you give them?
I think I'd say that everything's a phase and that you can feel very overwhelmed and you can really feel like it's going to remain like that forever. But things always change and always progress. And so don't panic. Yeah.
Thank you so much to Izzy Sooty for coming to talk to me. That we actually talked for about an hour and a half. So I managed to whittle it down, which was very tricky because I could have talked to her for, I was about to say twice as long. Well, that's not that long really, is it? But a long time. I could definitely have talked to her for a long time. It was a joy to speak to her. Next week, I will be talking to Philippa Allam. She's a model and the partner of actor, writer Rufus Jones.
Before you go, a couple of notices, as always. If you like the podcast, it would be brilliant and immensely helpful to me if you could rate and subscribe. It's just a very effective way of giving it a bit of a boost, so people who might like it can get to hear it. Also, if you do really like it, then go to patreon.com/thetrapdoor to find out other ways you can support the podcast. Thanks for listening, as always, and I'll see you next time.
Bye-bye.